Welcome to this week's edition of Dugout Dish Podcast. I'm Ian Kirikides, joined by my wonderful co-host, Keith Lashen. How are we doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. A lot has changed since we recorded a similar episode to this a year ago. I believe we released it on December 27th of 2023. For those of you who have been listening to the podcast, our steadfast followers, you'll know that a lot's changed. We've got the new contact rule. We've got the expectation that roster changes will happen, which are likely. We're going to touch on that, probably release an episode on that in a week or two. So keep an eye out for that. But quite a bit's changed, and I think it's important to kind of rehash some timelines, some expectations, and just kind of shed some light, give some better understanding of what the next 6 to 9 months can look like for 2026 and what the next 18 to 20 months can look like for 2027, and kind of talk through some of that stuff. And we'll see where it takes us. Where do you want to start, Coach?
I don't know. So much has changed in 12 months. Let's start with rosters, I suppose, since that's the easiest one and we've talked about it the most. The roster limit is obviously at 34. What we're hearing and what has been kind of floating around in the Twitter sphere by some people who are in the know, is that there's not really going to be a limit, we don't think, for the fall. But by 12-1, December 1st, when the portal opens, rosters are going to have to be submitted at 34. This is also, and we can dive into this in a little bit, this is also if your school / conference, however that ends up being decided, opts in to the revenue sharing. So if you're revenue sharing, 34 is going to be the number. If you're not revenue sharing, we believe that number is going to be around 40. Unsure, unclear if those are going to be school or conference decisions. That stuff remains to be seen, but let's just assume for argument's sake that everyone's going to be at 34 by 12-1. What that means is that you're going to have to make some, as a 2026 grad, you're going to have to make some super informed decisions on where ultimately it is you want to end up playing college baseball if you aspire to and ultimately do end up playing college baseball at the Division I level. Some schools are going to continue to bring in a lot more players than 34. Who knows what that number ultimately is, but it will be higher than 34, and they will whack their roster down to 34 at 12-1 to be in compliance with the NCAA. Other schools, maybe they stay at 34, maybe they have 35, 36, 37, and it's only one or two guys that get cut / are redshirted. And then it's up to the schools whether or not they count towards their roster. So there's a lot of things that have changed over the course of the last year. Last year when we did this podcast, and we're going to release it about one day to the day that we did last year. And last year we really just hammered home the new contact change rule, and that coaches can't talk to you until August 1st of your junior year. So it slowed down the contact rule and everything that was going on there. So the younger classes didn't necessarily have to worry about, committing and entertaining offers and doing those things, because you won't be able to do it until August 1st going into your junior year of high school. Now that rule still, as far as we know, is not going to change. But the roster limit thing is obviously a huge thing. The roster limit was 40. Now it's going down to 34. It should be noted that we're not too far removed from having 35-man rosters pre-COVID. So while this does seem like it is going to be a massive change, in the very recent past, this was doable. It wasn't a thing that was, hemmed and hawed about and a super tough thing to be able to do. So, while you are going to hear a lot of people complain about it, I ultimately, this isn't something, if you've coached this game long enough, you were at 35 5 years ago. And, everyone was able to make it work. So I don't think it, you know, are we going to see some changes? Yes. Obviously the transfer portal of the free transfers doing what you want to be able to do and going up is, it throws a little bit of a monkey wrench into this and a little bit more, you know, it makes it a little bit more of a fluid conversation from a recruiting standpoint. But, you know, the biggest thing to focus on is that you want to be able to find a place where you are going to be able to A, find the right fit, and B, have a legitimate shot to be able to compete and play on that roster. You don't want to get yourself in a spot where you're guy 42 and you have to beat out seven other guys to make the roster, and then you're guy 34. You know, you want to go in knowing that you have a legit shot of being able to be on that team come 12-1, and you have a legit shot to be able to compete and work for Burn and have that opportunity throughout the course of your freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year at college. And you want it, you need to ask those questions, and you need to be as informed as you can possibly be in order to make the correct decision on the front end.
Yeah, I think that's the big trickle down of the roster stuff, right? It's going to slow some stuff down, and we've seen it slow stuff down for the 26s. Transfer portal's done that as well, especially because this won't affect the 26 class as much. But you know, next year, this next upcoming June, the transfer portal is going to be chaos because of the amount of kids that are going to get put in there because of the roster crunch. But I think you hit on a really important thing. Right now, what we're expecting is that coaches have to make their 34-man roster decision by December 1st. But they have not put a cap on the amount of kids you can bring on campus in the fall, which is going to raise a major dilemma. And it's something that, as a high school recruit, you need to be fully aware of the situation that you are walking into. To your point, there are schools that right now in today's day and age, they bring 60 guys on campus. If they don't have a cap, they may bring 60 guys on campus for next fall. And if they need to get down to 34, there's 16 guys who are going to have to go in the transfer portal on December 1st, and they cannot transfer to a Division I school. It's junior college, Division II, Division III, or NAIA. If you're going to commit to a school and you know that they have routinely or historically brought on large numbers in the fall, you need to read the tea leaves, and you need to really be able to understand what your chances of making that roster are, because the last thing you want as a freshman is to walk into a situation and you get to campus and you go, holy crap, I'm not going to make this team. And now you're put in a situation where basically the only option you have is to go to junior college mid-year or transfer to Division II or Division III. It's happened a little bit this year, but if those cap numbers aren't solidified, if they don't put a cap on the number of kids, or they don't allow for some roster flexibility in the form of like a taxi squad, or maybe red shirts don't account. Maybe you can redshirt guys and they don't count against your roster numbers. I don't know what they're ultimately going to do with it. But if you're committed to a school and they've got 13 or 14 guys committed in your class, and four or five of those guys or six or seven of those guys aren't legitimate high school draft picks, you need to start to do the math a little bit, because the math ain't mathing. And you don't want to be stuck in that situation. And everybody thinks, well, it won't be me that gets cut. But wouldn't you want to have a pretty good idea of what you're getting into? It's kind of where I'm getting at here, is that you need to do your homework. You need to be cognizant of what's going on from a recruiting perspective, and you need to make decisions on where is the best fit for you, not what is the shiniest car on the lot. What's the one that's going to serve you and your family the best in terms of your development, in terms of the coaching staff, in terms of your opportunity to play? You know, some of these schools, and it's not their fault. There's so much pressure to win in college baseball. If you have the opportunity to bring 45 or 50 guys on campus and have a super competitive fall, I get it. It's not the coach's fault, right? And a lot of people like to throw shade on coaches and they don't care about the kids. And well, they do, but they also care about their families and their ability to win and in their job security. And if you want a really competitive fall, one way to do it is bring a bunch of really good players together and let them sort it out on their own. So I don't buy the whole it's all the coach's fault thing. Yeah, it'd be nice if the NCAA came back and said, hey, you're going to have a cap of 40 and then you have to get down to 34. But I don't know if that's going to happen. But as far as the roster stuff goes, is 26. Make sure you're doing your homework. Make sure you understand what that team has done historically. Go take a look and see how many guys went into the portal. Go take a look and see what their roster sizes have been historically. Go take a look and see how many guys have graduated from that program, right? Where, what is your opportunity going to look like? And make a well-informed decision, because if baseball is driving your decision, you want to walk into a situation where you have a chance to develop as a baseball player and not be man 34 on the roster because you made an uninformed decision. Did I cover that?
Yeah.
Did any of that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm kind of passionate about this one. I think a lot of people get blinded by the really shiny object and they lose sight of ultimately what's really important for them and what really impacts your experience on a college campus. And I think that the coaching staff and the opportunity are two really, from a pure baseball perspective, are two really, really important things that guys need to consider. And you need to make sure that place is going to be a really good fit for you, because ideally you want it to be the one place you go to. And if it's not going to be if you're going to go to more than one place, you want it to be on your accord, not because you're in a situation where you're getting told, hey man, you don't have a spot here anymore. If you're leaving, you want to be like, all right, I have another place that I got to go, versus getting kind of shown the door, if you will.
Yeah. I think it goes back to what we always talk about, is that you're opting into an uber competitive environment, but you could also be opting into an uber competitive environment with really putting yourself in a no-win situation. And that's what you want to avoid. You know, there's, if you're going to go to a program where that has happened and that's what they do, then you need to understand that there is a pretty good likelihood that you might end up in the transfer portal on December 1st. You have to be okay with that and knowing that that is a legit possibility for you. You know, and if you're talking, you know, bringing in 60 guys, which, look, it's happened, you know, that's damn near a 50% shot. Like, that's a high likelihood that you could find yourself in the transfer portal. And you can't, you know, if it happens, you can't be like, well, I had no idea that this was going to happen. Well, I mean, look around. There's 60 dudes out here. We have to get 34. Like, almost half of the fall roster is going to be cut. And, you know, so I think that, you know, being aware of those things and asking those questions and understanding what those programs do is paramount in the recruiting process for kids and families. You know, and to your point, and I agree, like, you know, the amount of money that has been injected into college baseball and the amount of eyes on it and the amount of, you know, the revenue sharing and other stuff. And like, look, it's not going to be the revenue sharing that you get at football and basketball, but, you know, I would argue, like, with schools having the ability to do what they want with that money, there are going to be some baseball schools out there that get a little bit of a larger piece of the pie because they are generating more revenue than ever before. But you got to understand that, like, this is a game, and with all of the things that have happened in the lawsuits and the changes and all this stuff, like, this has shone a light on the fact that this is a business, like it or not, it is a business. I mean, we have people that want to unionize college athletes. Like, if you're unionizing as college athletes, you are essentially saying this is a business. So you can't get mad if you go to a place and you get cut and then blame the people that are doing it. Like, this is what this is. And unfortunately, that's where we're at in college sports. And it's not just going to be baseball. It's going to be a lot of different sports. But I don't blame the guys who are doing it. Do I think there's a number that is excessive? Yes, I do. Like, I do think that if you brought in 60 guys, it's an excessive number of guys to bring in to get down to 34. But I also understand the rationale behind it of, like, if we bring all these guys in and they're all pretty good players, it's going to sort itself out by the end of the fall and we're going to be damn good in the spring. And I understand that rationale from a competitor standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, from a personnel standpoint. Like, I get that rationale. Do I think it's a bit much? I do. But I'm also not coaching at that level and I'm not getting paid multiple million dollars a year to keep my job. So I might think a little bit differently if I was in the shoes of that person who's making multiple million dollars a year to keep my job and to win. So, you know, I used to say this a lot and it's true. Like, you know, you go into the office at the end of the year and you have your end of year meeting with the AD, like they ain't asking you how Andy Kirikides feels, you know, about him, you. Like, generally speaking, that conversation is dominated by, all right, you had a pretty good year, won some games. How do we win more next year? What are we doing recruiting-wise to get in better players? What are we doing to be able to put ourselves on the national stage so that we can, you know, continue to attract high-end student athletes to this institution so that we can continue to build this way? Very rarely is it going to be like, hey, you know, so-and-so thought that, you know, one of the guys who filled out this anonymous questionnaire said that, you know, you yelled at them one too many times. Like, you're not really having that conversation. Now, if it's 36 of them, probably having that conversation. But one, probably not. It's going towards the vast majority of those meetings are always like, hey, this is the year. What do you think? How do we get better? How do we move on? Blah, blah, blah. It's very binary, black and white. Win, loss, how do we get better? How are we attracting better student athletes? What are we doing there? And ultimately, like, that's your job. That's your livelihood. That's how you put food on the table for your family. That's your security. And if I'm making a lot of money, I'm going to make different decisions based off of those types of things. Not only because I want to win and I want to be really good, but I also, like, this is what my family counts on me for in order to provide. And if that means that I bring in a couple more kids and we cut a couple, but, like, you have to understand going into this, again, it's a hyper competitive situation that you're walking into, not only from a recruiting standpoint, but from a college baseball standpoint, from a competition, from a playing, from a being on the roster to you might be playing at a different school the following year. But you got to know that before you go and sign the dotted line and say you're going. You have to know that. You can't go in that. Like, and I'll be honest with you, like, gone are the days, in my personal opinion, with how much press this has gotten. And I'm not saying that we're the most listened to podcast, but the amount of people who do listen to this and when we talk about it, like, you cannot, if you get cut on 12-1 next year, like, you cannot be like, I had no idea. What do you mean you had no idea? Then you made the least informed decision ever. Like, you cannot say that anymore. The information's out there. Like, it's easy to find. Like, search the Google machine, use it to your advantage, and you're going to be able to get a lot of the information it is that you're looking for. If you don't have it, ask.
Yeah, I mean, the biggest baseball followers on Twitter, like Kendall Rogers and Mike Rooney and stuff, they're tweeting about this stuff.
Right.
And they have their stances on this and they don't differ very much. And those guys don't usually take a stance. They usually kind of present the facts, but I mean, they haven't really beat around the bush with that. There's a lot of people going in the portal December 1st next year if they don't cap the fall rosters, because there's no incentive for these coaches to not make their environment as competitive as possible. And there isn't a single coach to talk to up and down Division I baseball. There's not a single coach who has an issue with 34. They were all concerned with, are we going to be able to have more guys on campus in the fall so we can practice better? So it's never been an issue of what's my final roster for the spring. It's when do I have to make that decision?
Right.
Because if you talk to any of these guys, and we've had, I don't know if we've gotten into it too much with guys, because it is a touchy, it's a touchy subject, and it's not all out there in terms of what ultimately is going to happen. But they're all concerned with, are we allowed to have 40? Can we have 45? Do we get a taxi roster? Can we redshirt guys and have them not count? Because right now, if you're a money guy and you redshirt, you count against the roster.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the questions they're asking. They don't care about the 34 come season time. They want to know that they can have a really competitive fall, because that's when you implement systems. That's when you evaluate guys. That's a really huge part of college baseball, is that fall season and laying the groundwork for the spring. Once you get into the season, yeah, I'm sure guys like having a couple extra arms, you know, a couple extra position players. Maybe you can absorb some injuries. But let's be honest, the guy who's 18th and 19th on your pitching staff, if that dude has to throw a bunch of innings for you in the spring because of injuries, it's probably not going to go good anyways. Nobody's fired up to throw their 19th guy in leverage spots if that was the 19th guy going into the season. Sometimes guys prove you wrong and they get chances and they do well, but you know, generally you've got enough information there. So, but you know, we're not getting off topic, because this is important for 26s. This is important for 27s, because unless this changes, you have to be aware of this throughout your recruiting timeline. From when you commit to where you commit at the Division I level, you got to understand these things, and you got to be aware of the environment and the landscape that you're operating in. But I think that kind of leads us to the next important thing, is timelines, right? And the Division I cycle is kind of year round. It doesn't really stop for the 26s right now. Like, they're going to be evaluating. June is usually a heavy transfer portal month for these guys, but Division I players, they could commit anywhere from today to this time next year, depending on availability, depending on when guys pop, roster spots, all that kind of stuff. Division II and Division III for the 26s, spring, summer, fall is when that's going to really pick up, right? And for Division III specifically, most of that, like, hot and heavy action in terms of offers going out, that's more like August, September, October type of stuff, where guys have found out that they're not Division I players, or they've narrowed in on schools that really fit them from a social and an academic perspective. But I mean, we've had guys on here, Division III coaches, have talked about, like, we don't even start bringing kids on campus until August, and we don't offer anybody who's never been to campus. So that timeline is pushed back pretty significantly. And that's important to understand if you're in this process, because you shouldn't be panicking if you don't have a home in May or June. Because the reality is, most uncommitted kids right now, even if they're Division I guys, the vast majority of those kids will find their homes between June and the end of October of this upcoming year. And I think that's important to understand. Agree or disagree?
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to continue on with a thought. No, I agree. I was, it's funny because we were talking about this morning, but I was thinking about this on the way to the gym, that I thought that this would be a good podcast to follow up with last year's.
Heath lifts weights, by the way.
Because I do. Because so much has changed in 12 months, right? But the other is I think it's an easy starting point to think of as you're listening to this. Like, if you're a 26, right? And I'll do 26, 27, 28 very quickly. But if you're 26 and the vast majority of those guys are going to be recruited between June and October, right? That legitimately gives you January, February, March, April, May, June, 6, July, August, September, October, 10. 6 to 10 months of development to be able to get to the spot where it is that you want to get to. And in the grand scheme of things, that is a very long time. Just this time last year, we were talking about, you know, the contact rule being the biggest thing and being talked about and how it's going to slow things down. And it did, and it will continue to. But over the course of the last 12 months, there has been so many things that have happened in life that has changed all of this stuff. And that's just for 26. Is if you're a 27, you can't be talked to for 7 full months. And that, like, and let's be real, the guys, it's going to slow down for 27s, just like it did for 26s, because we're going to, like, all the big time schools are going to work through, all of the schools, especially at Division I level, are going to work through the transfer portal first before they start deciding on high school guys, because they're trying to get to know you through that process. And then you're going to have to be really, really, really good and make an informed decision super early on. And if 26s, like we just talked about, the vast majority of them, and I would argue that it's well over 90% of them, are going to commit in June to October of this year, the same, by logic, would hold true for the 27 class, which then gives you a full year plus another 6 months, which is 18 months, and then another to 10, which is 22 months. Is my math mathing there, data scientist?
Yes, I believe it is.
Okay. That's 18 to 22 months. You legitimately have almost 2 full years, a year and a half to 2 full years to develop yourself to get recruited at the spot it is that you want. And again, I think it's, you know, and if we go to 28s, back it up even further, right? Like, you know, we're at 2.5 to almost 3 years for you to hit your recruiting timeline cycle, assuming all things stay the same, right? Like, I would imagine that after this, we're not really going to have a lot of wholesale changes on the recruiting landscape, because so much has shaken up over the course of the last year or two. Are there going to be minor tweaks here and there? Sure. But from a timeline standpoint, assuming everything stays the same, which I believe it will, if you're a 28, you're looking at 2.5 to 3 years of development. The amount of stuff that you can get better at over the course of that time frame, whether it's 6 to 10 months, whether it's 18 to 22, whether it's 2.5 to 3 years, like, that's what you need to focus on if you want to get yourself recruited. And again, I was thinking about this morning, because it's such an easy thing to kind of assess in at the end of the year, turning over a new leaf into January 1, 2025. It's easy to look at it from that standpoint of like, oh, wow, I have a year and a half to 2 years before I legitimately am making a decision on where I'm going to school. The vast majority of kids, including maybe myself, like, that's a lot of time. I don't need to panic on, you know, what I need to do from a recruitment standpoint. I need to focus on myself getting bigger, faster, stronger, getting better defensively, getting better in the cages, being better on the mound, working on holding runners, working on picks, working on my backhand, because my backhand's the weakest part of my game, working on reads in the outfield, working on blocking baseballs as a catcher, working on being able to, you know, what my swing looks like and getting off my best swing every single time that I swing the baseball bat, being able to locate fastballs glove side, being able to locate fastballs arm side. Where's my breaking ball going to be? I want to be able to throw a breaking ball in an 0-0 count. I want to be able to wipe one out 0-2, 1-2. You know, all of those things you can focus on over the course of this time frame and put yourself in a position to be recruited when the time comes for you to be recruited. Say it all the time. You can't get recruited. You have to be recruitable first, before you become recruited. And you have so much time in order to do that. And it's never too late, right? Like, you can start now. Start tomorrow. This is going to be released on the 26th of December. Start tomorrow on the 27th.
There's plenty of guys who are not Division I players right now that we fast forward 6 months and they will be Division I players because they focused on the things that they can control. It's timing is important, right? I think it's also important to frame up, like, specifically for the 2027 class. 99% of high school kids who are going to play in college baseball will not receive a phone call on August 1st. That time frame of early commitment is reserved for, like, a really, really small percentage. There's only 2.8% of kids play Division I or something like that. It's going to be less.
2.3.
Call it 2%. a small percentage of that 2% is committing in August, September, and October of this year as for 2027. Not to say you shouldn't shoot for it, right? And if you're an awesome player and you get that kind of attention, good for you. But the reality is, and I think this serves as it should reduce some of the stress around it, is that most kids, that's just not the scenario they're going to walk into. And you need to be honest about what your summer looks like if you're a 27, about where you are and what you're doing, right? Because there's a lot of people who are going to spend a lot of money flying around the country, playing in these tournaments and going to showcases. And if you're not in that small percentage of kids, or you don't have good information that indicates that that is value for you, you're just wasting time, and you're better off making sure that you continue to focus on getting better, getting developed, and getting yourself in a position to where you are actually recruitable. And make sure you're targeting the right schools, because I think a lot of people waste a lot of time and money thinking that exposure is the right move, when a lot of times exposure just gets you exposed.
Ooh.
You like that one?
Put that on a t-shirt.
I can't take credit for that. I got to shout out my old friend, Jericho Weitzel. He's the head coach at Jamestown Community College. Comes from a long line of really awesome baseball people. His dad was a scout for a long time in Twins organization. And his uncle was a scout with the Twins and also coached at Florida for quite a while. And he said that to me one day, and I was like, oh, man, that's freaking good. The other thing I want to hit, because I'm feeling a little bit saucy, is for 28s and 29s, and this is more targeted towards the parents, like, nobody cares how good you are when you're 14 anymore. So if you're a really good 14-year-old and you're like in the perfect game rankings or whatever, like, good for you. Keep it up, because you don't want to get caught by the competition. But there's a lot of 14-year-olds right now who have dreams of playing college baseball who aren't anywhere close. And that's okay, because you're not getting judged on how good you are until you're 16 or 17 years old. And don't let the stress of this process get in the way of you focusing on the things that are going to be important to you, which is the weight room and making sure you're playing with a good travel organization, making sure that you're developing. Don't get caught up in all the hype with it, because the way the rules work now, it matters less than ever being good when you're 14 years old. You got to focus on continuing to get better and continuing to close the gap on your competition. So don't let all the social media stuff and the PG rankings and whatever get you all hot and bothered about where you are. Focus on where you're going to be when it's time for you to get recruited. And the first time that you're even going to really get evaluated is, honestly, it's, you know, fully evaluated outside of maybe doing some on-campus camps if you're really well informed, like July, heading into your sophomore year of high school, your junior year of high school. That's really the first time these coaches are actively bearing down on 27s. Like, they got guys that have come to camp and guys that they've seen, but I can't think of any Division I coach that we've talked to who was actively out evaluating 2027s last summer. Just doesn't make any sense for them. You know, 2 or 3 years ago, yeah.
No, under the current landscape.
Focused on them, but not anymore. The rules have changed how these guys do it.
Under the current landscape, it's going to go portal first, then the next round of high school kids, and then on down the line. Like, there's no, you can't talk to them. You can't get to know them. They can't entertain offers. There's no what. So then, what becomes the point? Like,
yeah, it's a waste of time.
And let's face it. Like, people have come on this podcast and said, like, yeah, I didn't like it, but I had to do it because, like, that was the way of the world.
Yeah.
But, like, what 14-year-old kid, 15-year-old kid, for that matter, can legitimately make a really good decision on where they're going to spend their next 4 years in college? Like, they're a sophomore in high school.
Yeah.
I mean, I know what I was like at 15. I wasn't making an informed enough decision to be able to do that. Like, what were we doing? And we all had problems with it, right? Like, and then not to beat a dead horse, but like, that's one of the really good things that came out of the contact rule change, is that it slowed that stuff down to where there wasn't, you don't have the pressure. Now, do I think there's lingering effects to it? Yeah, I do. Like, we've talked to a number of families that are like, I'm so far behind the eight ball as a 2026 or 27. Like, you're not even like, sure aren't. Like, if you're 27, you're not even close to being behind. If you're 26, no, not really. Like, you just need to focus on development and then creating a really good plan for what your summer looks like, supplement what you're doing with the summer team, and get your name out in front of the coaches. It is that, you know, the schools that you're interested in. Simple, you know, but is that lingering effect going to happen for the next couple of years because everyone has seen a ton of guys commit before this rule change? Yeah. But ultimately, it's going to we'll pass that part of it because people are going to become aware of it. You know, I just think that like the timeline stuff from a 26, 27, 28, like, you know, the 27s and 28s, like, you just got to focus on development. And if you're a 27, like, getting in front of the right people late summer, early fall for what you want to set up for the following year, and just continually to get better, you know. But I mean, 6 to 10 months, the amount of stuff they can change when you're 17 years old, 6 to 10 months, like, it's, you can see a light year of difference in that time frame in order to be recruited. And you're right, there's a lot of guys right now on, we're recording on December 16th. This will be released in 10 days. And there's a lot of guys right now that are not Division I baseball players that will ultimately end up playing Division I baseball that are 2026s, because they're going to get to work and they're going to go do the things they need to do in order to succeed. And come this summer, they're going to show up and show out, and they're going to get a lot of interest, and they're ultimately going to sign somewhere and play Division I baseball. And conversely, there's a lot of guys who think they're Division I baseball players who aren't going to do it and won't play Division I baseball. And that's fine. We've talked about it ad nauseum. Division II, Division III, JUCO, NAIA, like, there's a lot, like, competitive baseball out there. It's good. You know, it's fine. You know, but the timeline stuff, I think, is just super important to understand that, like, you know, if you're a parent listening to this, or a kid and you're a 2026, like, you're not behind. It's okay. You just need to have a really good plan and understanding of what it is that you're going to undertake during the early parts and the middle parts of 2025, or in order to get in front of the coaches you want to be seen by in order to commit. 27s, 28s, go develop. Bigger, faster, stronger, get in the weight room. Do all those things. You'll set yourself up for success.
One thing I'll add for the 26s, and I'm sure we'll hit on this again as we get a little bit closer to it, but right now, most 26s are likely, you know, are dangling the Division I carrot out there, and they should, because if that's what drives you and that's what motivates you to go do your work and get in the weight room and do all the stuff that we talk about, great. If you get to July and you don't have any Division I schools talking to you, you need to, and you're serious about playing college baseball, you need to open up the doors to the Division II and Division III schools. One, because what we talked about, it's super competitive, but two, you can pursue two things at once, right? And you don't want to close those doors to really good opportunities. And I can tell you right now, there's Division I schools that there's division II and Division III programs that are much more desirable than some Division I programs for a variety of different reasons. And I think one of the big mistakes people make is that they think if they're not a Division I player, they're not a success. This is too competitive to discount opportunities that may be out there. And you got to read the tea leaves. If you're trying to play at a certain collection of schools and you've played in front of those schools and those schools aren't calling you, it's not their fault. They're not wrong, right? You may think they're wrong, and that's okay, but the reality is that if you're not getting the attention from the schools that you are looking to get attention from, and they have seen you It's probably because they don't think that you're in a place where you're recruitable for them. Doesn't mean you're a bad player. Doesn't mean that you're not a college baseball player. But you have to be open to any type of opportunity that fits what you're looking for. And a lot of times the division is the last thing that should really be accounted for, especially when you get into that July, August, September timeframe. You need to open up, you need to open up your vision to some other schools that may be a really good fit for you in the long run.
Agreed.
Anything else you want to add, Coach?
Nope.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody. Tune in next week. We'll have another good topic for you. Talk to you then. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for listening this week. If you're watching on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button and smash that like button for us. Check us out on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, as well as Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at EMD Baseball. If you want to find out what me and Keith do to help families and players navigate the recruiting process, go ahead and check us out on emdbaseball.com. Take a few minutes to check out our new online academy. I promise you'll get some good information out of that. Thanks again for listening. Check in with you next week.